Okay, what are the animals?
Did you know that these animals live in Africa?
Yeah.
And they are hippopotamus, lemur, and this is the best one, western green. It's a type of snake, western green snake.
Oh, an adder? Ass?
No.
Python? Cobra?
No.
Okay, learning how to look things up on Google. That's what he was learning during computer time today. So, I was curious how they taught him.
A snake now.
What?
A western green mamba.
Ooh, mamba. That's a good one.
Hey, I'm here with Laura Roeder, founder and CEO of Meet Edgar and Paper Bell. She's a blogger, a Twitter personality, a lifestyle designer, and the mother of two children under the age of 10. Today, she's going to talk with me about how she manages everything. So, welcome to my podcast, Laura.
Thank you, Paige. I've escaped my children for the night to be here.
Can you say that again? It's so funny.
Okay. Paige has the giggles. Okay. Thank you, Paige. I've escaped my children tonight to record this podcast with you.
That sounds really ominous. I've escaped my children. Do they have you hostage? Like when you go home, is it just them? And they're like, mommy, color with me. Mommy, watch television with me. Mommy, they're just clinging on to you. Is that what it's like?
Yes. I mean, children do hold you hostage. I think something that's really hard to wrap your mind around before you have children is just someone has to be in the house. The children are home, an adult has to be in the house. So before you have children, if you want to pop out, if you want to get something, if you and your partner want to go to the pub or the coffee shop or whatever you go, after you have children, yeah, you have to figure out who's watching the children, right? Like one of you has to watch the children. And it makes your life extremely different in a way that I think is hard to understand before you have kids.
Is your oldest a boy or a girl?
So I have a son who is 9 and a daughter who is 5.
Okay, see, if your daughter was the oldest, you could just have her watch your youngest. That's how it was for me growing up. I've actually heard that people who have oldest daughters are the happiest because the oldest daughters are the ones who watch the younger siblings while the parents go to pubs and coffee shops.
I think that was a very sexist comment. And my older son, I mean, he's 9, so we don't leave the kids alone at home. But yeah, he looks after her and they get along really well.
That's cute. I know. I like read that. And I was like, that's interesting because I'm an oldest daughter. I don't know. Where are you? Do you have brothers or sisters? Are you an oldest sister?
I am an only child. So yeah, I don't have any siblings.
Sorry for my sexism about who could babysit. So before we begin, I have to ask, how do you feel about parents who offload a lot of responsibilities onto their kids? Putting aside being a working mom and managing so many things, how do you feel about parents who just give their kids all the responsibilities, cooking, cleaning, babysitting? Because it does happen to a lot of children, irrespective of gender.
I generally think that most kids don't have enough responsibility. I think my kids should have more responsibility than they do. It's very easy just to have your kids not really help with stuff at home because it's kind of faster and easier to do it yourself. So last year, we went traveling full-time for 6 months as a family, traveling around Asia, and we actually got in a much better practice of having the kids do chores, largely because we were killing time all day, and it takes them like an hour to tidy up the kitchen after breakfast, which they, you know, started doing every day. So that was a good way to be like, okay, we filled that hour in the morning. And so, you know, now they make their own breakfast. They usually don't tidy up after breakfast because we're going off to school. But yeah, I mean, it's hard too because as a parent, you don't know what things your kids are going to decide are traumatic later. Like I had a friend say, oh, you know, when I was a kid, my mom had me do all the meal planning and grocery shopping and she had a bunch of siblings. And she's like, that was way too much for me. My mom was really expecting me to be an adult. She viewed it as a negative thing, but someone else, I feel, could have the same experience and be like, oh, that was really cool that my parents allowed me to step up in that way and that my parents taught me how to do that. So I think it's just really hard with any of this stuff to know if what you're doing is going to come across to your kids as something that's positive or negative when they look back on it as an adult.
You seem like you're a great mom. I feel like your kids are going to grow up and just be happy people. Sometimes I think people who talk about parentification, it's person dependent. It really depends on the person's disposition and if they're generally a happy person or not, or if they look on the bright side of things. Because I feel like you can make anything a traumatic experience if you really tried to.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I have one good friend who went through what she went through when she was a child, like hard stuff, but pretty common stuff. And it's been interesting seeing her and her brother have extremely different reactions to it and relationships with their mom and dad as adults. So I think you're right. And it's something that I don't really stress about personally. Yeah, I think in general, my kids are happy. I think in general, I'm doing a good job raising them. So if they go off the rails when they're adults and decide that I've given them this huge amount of trauma, I mean, there's only so much I can do about that.
Yeah, you seem like a great mom and you manage many businesses and so many just different things. So I have to know first, how do you do it? Like, really? Can you show me your schedule? How do you do it?
So I work part-time and I work with my husband, which is another important factor in all this. We are co-founders of the business as well. And we both work part-time and we both have worked part-time since we had kids. So that's 9 years ago now. And our first business together, I had done businesses before I met him, but the first one we did together, Meet Edgar, we launched that when I was pregnant. So I had my first baby 3 months after we launched the company, really early in the company. And it was actually an amazing forcing function to be like, well, I can't make this business dependent on me because I'm about to go on mat leave. So it was actually a huge blessing in that I really designed the business to be able to operate and grow without me right from day one. And we did. My businesses have all been bootstrapped, but self-funded from the business before. So not the kind of bootstrapping where I'm starting out with $0, but have some money from the other project to put into it. So we did have a small team when we launched Edgar. And I try to have more help at work than I do at home, I guess. I mean, we have a cleaner that comes every week, but we haven't had a lot of nannies. We don't have any extra childcare now, and the kids are generally home after school, just hanging out and playing. So my kids are, you know, normal school schedule, which is like 9 to 3. So those are my hours to work, exercise, see friends, whatever. Basically, I am extremely deliberate in my time at work and making sure I'm only doing the highest leverage work that I need to do and that I enjoy doing. I just have a very hard line where I don't allow work to take over my entire life.
Okay, first question is, narrate your mom's work schedule. So what do you think? Let's try it this way. What do you think I do at work?
I think at work, you work on computers.
And what do I, like, do on the computer?
You work on Paper Bell.
And what sort of work do I do at Paper Bell?
You do software.
Okay. And do you know anything else about my work?
Not really.
Okay, say what you think my work schedule is, but put it in the third person, like my mom's work schedule. Like, here's my mom's work schedule. Give it your best guess.
So I think my mom's work schedule is gets onto the computer. Wait, no, first goes to the office, goes to her room thingy majiggle. Then she gets out her computer, opens it up, because you can't do anything if you don't open it up. And maybe headphones or something, I don't know. And then does software programming and all that stuff.
I can't believe you don't have a nanny or a babysitter. That's actually shocking. I went into this interview assuming you had some sort of outside help.
Yeah, and it's not like we never have. We had a nanny during the pandemic, which is, I think...
What's the pandemic?
Should I cancel my gym membership? Do you think it's going to be a big deal? I got Laura to have a giggle fest too, or Ethan.
So during the pandemic, we launched another company having a, God, how old were they? A 2 and 6 year old. And we did have a part-time nanny then because obviously nursery and school was closed. And so we had like no childcare to work without her. I don't want to make it sound like we've never had any kind of outside help. We've just had a bit when it's needed, I guess. We were extremely lucky to have a pandemic nanny because a lot of my friends that had young kids and were working are honest to God still psychologically recovering because it was such an intense and horrific time for so many moms in particular who were just expected to watch their kids and school their kids full time and still have their full time job, like all from their living room. And we were very, very lucky that we did not have that experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, separate from this isn't really the focus of the interview, but I feel like the learning loss and just the socialization issues we're going to see from the pandemic, I think it's going to be wild. If you were in ninth grade at the end of the pandemic, your last normal school year was sixth grade. Just wild to think about. So just tell me your story. How did you become an entrepreneur? And also, how did you become a mother? You don't need to tell me how it happened. Like, I know that. I know what happened. I know it. There's this dork.
I have been an entrepreneur for a very long time. So I've been a full-time entrepreneur since I was 21, I think, and I'm 39 now, 40 soon. It's my 40th year in July. So I started out being an entrepreneur, being a freelance designer and web designer, and then that moved into online courses, and then that moved into software. So I've done a few different business models. And I've always known that I wanted kids. It wasn't something I wasn't sure about. That was always clear for me. Basically, once I met my husband, which was when I was 28, we were both ready to have kids. So yeah, I met him when I was 28, and we had our first kid when I was 30.
It sounds like you've been on a schedule. It sounds like you had a good idea of who you were and where you wanted to go. Do you feel like that helped you sort of balance and manage all of the work you were doing?
So the schedule came into play in the sense that I love to plan ahead and have a long-term plan, and I've definitely always been that way. And when I was doing my course business, it was a typical course business where I was the teacher, I was the face of it. It was like Learn Social Media with Laura. And I knew that was not a business that I'd be able to sell. I knew that was not a business that I'd be able to take a huge amount of time away from. You know, you can have people do some of the things, but if the face of the business is you, you can't take yourself totally out of the business. So I actually was gunning for, okay, what's a different business that I could do that would allow me to have that freedom and time flexibility to focus on my family, a business that I could still keep going and not be in it at all. And I was interested in doing software, but I'm not a software developer. My husband is. So when I met him, I'm like, okay, cool. This is my ticket to do a software business. But I was deliberately looking to have my business match the kind of lifestyle that I wanted.
I love that. We love a planner. So it sounds like, you know, when you started your family for both children, you had them sort of at the inception of both businesses. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that? Was that on purpose or did that just happen?
That was not on purpose, except for the sense that I wasn't, I guess, worried about doing both at the same time. So, you know, when we started Edgar, we knew, you know, that hopefully we would get pregnant sort of soon-ish. And we didn't say, oh, I don't know if it's a good time to start Edgar. And then when we launched Paperbell, my daughter was born in 2018 and we launched it in 2020. So she was still, of course, little when we launched it. So I guess that's another thing about having those really clear lines in the sand and boundaries, thinking, yeah, it's going to be okay to launch a business with small children because I'm very clear on the time input that I'm going to put in. And if the business hadn't worked, like if I had got to a point where I'm like, you know what, this business is just not going to work unless I put in 80 hours a week, I'd be like, okay, this is not the business for me because that's not what I'm doing. Something I always tell entrepreneurs is someone has to do all the things, but that person does not have to be you. And of course, with bootstrapping, it's a bit of a chicken and the egg, right? Because you don't just have this huge bank account to hire people from. But it's getting to be a worse and worse excuse because you can hire people so fractionally now, right? Like you can go on Fiverr and get someone to do this tiny chunk of work for $100, you know? So I think it used to be a much better excuse where you're like, oh, I can't afford a W-2 employee. And it's like, we don't need to afford a W-2 employee, but can you afford some people to do a few projects for you? So if there's kind of a quote unquote secret to how I get a lot of things done, that's it. At the end of the day, it's just I'm not doing all the things. And we have a very small team. That doesn't mean I have a huge team, but I'm just very good at knowing it does not have to be me doing all the things.
I have a few questions about that. One, this sounds very methodical and well planned out, almost like you were putting things on a chessboard and watching them go into motion. Did you have a spreadsheet? Did you have some sort of planning document or something you were using? Or did you just do it in your head? Laura said, yeah, like for my life. Yes, like for your life, Laura.
No, and you can't control the timing of things. You know, I couldn't control when I got pregnant you also can't control exactly like when you're going to launch a company. So for us with the software businesses and working with my husband, Chris, it starts with him building the software. And obviously we have some kind of estimate of how long that's going to take, but we don't have an exact timeline. I definitely am very thoughtful and deliberate about kind of the steps and the pieces I want to take, but the timing is often not really up to me.
Very interesting. What would you have done if your business had been something that would have ended up taking 80 hours a week? Would you have looked for something else, or would you have gone, okay, my kids are young, time to be a full-time mom? Like, what do you think you would have done?
I definitely do not have the disposition to be a full-time mom to young children. Maybe like to teenagers or something. I don't know. I haven't gotten there. It is intense being with young children all day long. So I never really considered just being a mom. That wasn't, something for me. So yeah, if the business, if I'd been like, this one's just never going to work, I would have just stopped and started something else.
So you've always known you don't have the disposition to be a stay-at-home mom. Can I ask, what was it like for you growing up? Did you have a working mom? Were you always just, young Laura? Were you just on group projects taking care of the neighbor's kids? Like, can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So my dad was a self-employed architect and my mom helped to run the business. And my mom usually had a part-time job working for the state of Texas for like the health insurance and the benefits and stuff. So I am very grateful that I had a really good model in my dad and someone who worked for himself, but worked very reasonable hours. Like my dad was always home for dinner 100% of the time. Like my dad never missed anything for work. And I didn't realize until I was older how many entrepreneurs say, oh, you know how it is for entrepreneurs. So you just have to work 100 hours. That's just how it is when you own your own business. So I think I was very lucky to have a model of like, you can own your own business. For him, it was just like a kind of solo practice where he was a solo architect designing people's houses. I was very lucky not to have that idea implanted in my head. Like, those are opposite things. If you're going to work for yourself, you can't see your family. So I think I had a very good role model there.
You know, I actually read something once about how President Obama, when he was in office, he would have dinner with his children every single night at 6 o'clock. And I mean, it's like, if he's the president, most people, I would say, agree he did pretty good job. And he still had time to have dinner with his kids. If you're listening to this and you're like, I'm listening because I want to, you can have dinner with your kids. It's fine. Unless you're a single mom, then I think that's a little harder. My mom was a single mom, mm-hmm. So I just wanted to add that note because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier about being hostage, like your mom being a single mom, like if she needed to go to the store, she had to take you or leave you alone, right? Like every single time. I'm always thinking about my friends who do that. If my husband goes away for a week or whatever, and just managing the logistics of it, of having to do all the things by yourself, I'm like, this is incredible what single parents do.
What age do you think it's appropriate to leave a child home alone for an extended period of time? Maybe not overnight, but just to babysit their younger siblings. Like, what do you feel like is going to be the age for you and for your kids?
I feel like this is a legal question, so I'm not sure, like, consult your local laws when you're listening. My son is actually very responsible and very mature. So I am sure by the time he is like 11 or 12 or maybe even 10, I'd be comfortable leaving him alone for his little sister for a little bit. We would probably leave him alone on his own now for a little bit, but we haven't really done it yet.
Cute. I don't know why. You can't see it. Laura's face is, she's just smiling. She loves her kids. Oh my gosh, she's really cute. So when I was growing up, I had two little brothers. My mom, like if she had to go to the grocery store, she'd go and I would take care of my little brothers. But that's only going for like an hour. And she locked the door and she'd be like, so Paige, don't unlock this door. Whatever you do. She's like, there's going to be a monster that will come in. And also I counted all the M&Ms. So I'll know if you took one. It was just, and I was sick. So I was like, I don't want to get in trouble. Oh my God. I remember I had some friends. Oh my God. It's just a memory that was unlocked. So she went to the grocery store with my little brother. She's like, so Paige, do you want to go? And I was like, no, my friends are coming over. And so my friends came over and she's like, I counted the M&Ms, Paige. I know if you'll take one. My friend took one and I was so mad. I was like, my mom counted them. And my friend was like, little 7-year-old neighbor friend was like, no, she didn't, Paige. Like, yes, she counted all of them. Because I was the oldest child, so I was a role follower. Then I found out my mom didn't actually count the evidence. I remember she came home and I was so scared. I was like, my mom is going to be so mad at me and she's going to know I ate the M&M's. And she's not going to believe me because if I see my friend ate the M&M's, she'd be like, no, it was you, Paige. And it was fine. So that's how I learned I could eat M&M's when my mom was gone. I'd be okay. But I'm sorry, I'm crying. This is why I can't do video. So your kids sound wonderful. They sound very cute. They sound maybe a little high energy.
And they have British accents.
That's so cute. Okay. So how is it just being a mom? How did it impact your career? Can you give me some negatives and positives? Like, you started both your businesses when your children were very young, baby, infancy. I actually don't hear that very often. I hear either long career women having kids, taking a break, and then going back to their jobs while raising children, or having kids and then starting businesses later. I don't feel like I've ever heard of someone starting a business while they're starting a baby twice. A business is a baby. Just tell me about that. Was that on purpose?
Yeah, I have a few friends who have done it. And I definitely, before I had my first, I was lucky enough to have a few female entrepreneurs that I could talk to and just be like, tell me all the things about what's going on. A lot of women who are working corporate jobs will take a break. Something that I've noticed living as an American in the UK is the UK has a lot of part-time professional jobs. And this is a massive problem in the US. Like, if you are looking for a part-time job, it's like, go to Starbucks. There's just very few part-time jobs for any kind of knowledge worker, really. I mean, you can freelance, which a lot of people do start freelancing to have that freedom. But it's one of the things that's so broken about the US is that parents often have to choose between working a quote-unquote normal kind of 48-hour a week office job as a parent. You're seeing your kids for bedtime. That's just the reality of that schedule. Like, you're dropping them off before work in the morning. They need to go to some sort of care, nursery or after school club or whatever, depending on their age, until like 5, 5:30. That's dinner time when you have kids. So it's like dinner time, bedtime. And that's your time with the kids. So you have to choose between that or often just not working at all, because there aren't good jobs out there that let you work part-time hours.
Growing up, my mom had to work, I think, 3 jobs at once just to stay afloat. America as a country does not support working parents. It's either you have one parent who stays home or one parent who gives their salary to daycare in the best scenario. Did you move to England specifically because of the way you can parent there?
I definitely choose to raise our kids there. I think there's a lot of things about the culture that I like for kids better than the US. And anything I'm saying about US culture is obviously a huge generalization, right? Because there's so many different cultures in the US and people do things so many different ways. I mean, that's true everywhere. But I'm trying to think where to start with the kids stuff. Okay, here's one example of things that's different in the UK. In the US, kids spend so much time in sports, and it is baffling to me. I'm like, are they all going, do you think they're all going to be professional soccer players? Like, it's so confusing to me, the level of intense sports that kids do in the US. It's so normal for an 8-year-old to have sports practice like several times a week, for their parents to spend every weekend driving them around to sports tournaments, like all over the state or all over the country. It's so strange to me, like, that, because it's such a huge time commitment for the kids and for the family. And I just don't get the purpose of it. In the UK, it's not like that. And of course, it depends where on the UK and the school and stuff. But like, my kids, they don't have any weekend activities. They do one after school club a week, and it's like about an hour after school. I just want them to have a lot of unstructured free time. And I find that that's very unusual in American parenting, that it's all about having like activity after activity after activity for your kids. And I just want my kids to hang out with their neighbor friends after school. I want them to have time to just do what they want to do.
Your kids are going to love you growing up. There's no worse of sports. Actually, my mom put me in baseball for a year when I was a child. You might not be surprised to hear that I was not good at it. Laura's shaking her head. She says she's not surprised. What's that supposed to mean?
I was also terrible at sports. Luckily, my parents never forced me to join any sports teams. I do remember when I was in the fifth grade, I was the only kid who wasn't on a soccer team in my whole class. But they did. They always made me go to day camps all summer. And one time they made me go to cheerleading camps. I don't think the closest thing I've had to do to doing a sport.
Can you do a cheer for me right now? No?
I genuinely don't remember it.
Oh my gosh. So actually, when I played baseball, I would always run the wrong way when I hit the ball. And so one time that happened, I was a very sensitive little girl. And there are these pictures where I'm just crying in my baseball uniform because I went the wrong way. And my mom bought a bunch of them and made them into refrigerator magnets. I don't know why she did that, but there are these magnets of me just crying in my little yellow Pirates uniform.
Yeah, I was not big into the sports, but I was big into the crying.
And as an adult, you know, some things never change.
So you started your business same time you started having babies for both businesses. Give me the positives and the negatives of doing that. Like, what were some things that surprised you?
So it's interesting because what I want to say is I didn't have the freedom to just focus on my business, although that's a choice because I have plenty of male friends who don't seem to have had really much of any impact on their business after having kids. There are still a lot of men who don't really change their schedule, don't really change anything significant about their working life. There are some moms who do that. I mean, I didn't want to do that, right? Like, I wanted to have kids and spend time with the kids. Not all day, as I said, but spend some time with them. It's like I was saying about the pregnancy being a great constraint for launching the business. Before I had kids, so I always was an entrepreneur all through my early 20s, my 20s, and that's what I did. That's what I did for fun. I never had like a partying phase. Like, I grew my businesses and I worked and I really liked doing that. And I had friends. It's not like I was like sad and lonely sitting alone in my office, but that was by far the primary thing in my life. And now I think it's quite nice to have other focuses, you know, and not have my business just be the one thing. I guess when I say I think it's nice, I think it makes for a more fulfilling life is the truth. I think a lot of people who only have their business after that business isn't there, and that could be because they had a super successful exit. That doesn't even have to be a bad thing. But once they don't have that business anymore, they can get extremely lost because they got all of their self-worth from who they were in that role. So I'm grateful that it forces me not to just be focused on my business. Having kids humbles you. So much for so many reasons. I mean, one, they do not care, obviously, about anything that you view as sort of an adult professional accomplishment is completely uninteresting to them.
When you talk about people losing their identities after selling their businesses, does being a parent help you with identity formation? After you sold Meet Edgar, did having a child, did that help ground you?
Absolutely. I mean, something that comes up when you sell a business, people are like, oh, what did you do to celebrate? And it's like, well, we didn't jet off to Paris and stay in a super fancy hotel because super fancy hotels aren't really that much fun with kids because they don't have a kitchen. And you really want a kitchen when you have kids because you don't want to eat out three meals a day because it's a nightmare. So it's just like you're still living your everyday life. And it's like, I feel like I need to put caveats on all this because, of course, there are people who do have kids and jet off to the Paris hotel that have like the live-in nanny and all the things. Like, that's a way that you can choose to do it. Although I think probably more people listening to this are probably wanting to do things, probably want to spend more time with their kids and not less, right? I think a lot of people are in situations where they feel like they don't have a choice or they genuinely don't have someone like your mom, right? Working three jobs. Like, I would imagine it was just the financial reality that she was in, that that's just how she had to spend her time in order to have food for everyone. And that's just the position that some people are in. But yeah, it absolutely grounds you and humbles you to have kids because I always think about like what people talk about at people's funerals. And it shows you how surface professional accomplishments are. Like, it's quite sad if at someone's funeral, someone has this amazing list of all the businesses they've run, but everyone's like, yeah, but I didn't really know him, or he was a jerk, or like, there's not many people who cared that he died. I definitely like to think about it, to put it in perspective. What you want, I think, or what I want at the end of my life is just for the people around me to be like, yeah, I liked her. She was cool. Like, she made me feel good when we hung out. You know what I mean? I think what's more important, and for me to enjoy my life also. And I just think anyone who's done any kind of introspection at all sees that the professional accomplishments can be really fun. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive with being content or anything, but they're certainly not what brings you that everyday contentment, where having an amazing relationship with your family, with your kids, does bring you that everyday contentment.
How do you measure your success? Because you are very successful. Like, when you think about how you're successful and how you want to be remembered, what are some things that come to mind?
So honestly, how I try to measure it is, do I enjoy my day-to-day life? And that doesn't mean that every minute is super fun, but I do think that it is very important. And to me, it's what it means to be successful, to just have that normal day-to-day be like, yeah, this is what I want to be doing every day. So that means really enjoying my work and getting fulfillment out of my work, enjoying my schedule. For me, it's very important not to be rushed, not to be overscheduled. I run my company without any meetings because I don't like to have stuff on my calendar. I like to be able to choose what to do each day. I like to have time to exercise and meditate in the morning, and I don't want to have to wake up at 5 a.m. to do it. I do that stuff after I drop off my kids at school. All the stuff about, like, you got to get up at 4 a.m. to get it all in. It's like, or you can just choose to do it at 9 instead of to do it at 5, right? I keep feeling like I have to give these caveats. Like, of course, not everyone has these choices. But if you're someone running your own business, you kind of do have those choices. And I just see so many people that aren't aware of it. They've just convinced themselves that they have to be the one to do everything, or they've convinced themselves that no one will take them seriously unless they're showing up in the office 60 hours a week, unless they're doing all the sales calls, unless they're doing all the meetings, that's the only way to succeed. And for me, succeeding is having that freedom in my life. I did a podcast while I was here with, and he was like, oh yeah, I called a friend in the middle of the day the other day, and he just picked up the phone. And he's like, I thought, wow, that's so cool. That's what I want to have. I want to be able to pick up the phone in the middle of the day, because he currently doesn't have that with his role as the CEO of. And I'm like, oh, whoa, are there people that can't pick up the phone in the middle of the day? That's such a given for me, that it's so important to me to have that time freedom. So yes, that freedom, doing what I want in my day-to-day life, is my success metric.
Laura, I got to level with you. I suspect sometimes, not speaking about, I don't know him, he seems like a nice person. Sometimes I see posts from people that are like, woke up at 4 a.m., cold plunge, did all of these things. I think sometimes they're trying to show off. Think they want to show people, look how disciplined I am and how hard my life is. Like, no, you know who has a hard life? Someone who made 30 cents an hour sewing clothes in a developing country. Is that an okay developing country? I think that's the right thing. Yeah. But someone who has a hard life. I guess I look at that and I'm like, if you have time to be on Twitter for 8 hours a day, you could probably meditate at 9 a.m. if you wanted. I am a little surprised because when I always do research on my guests. I always look at the presentations they have. I always look at the talks they give. I look at the blog posts they make, look at all of that. You seem really relaxed. Like, in person, you're very down to earth. You're very calm. You're very centered. When I was looking at your stuff and how much stuff you've accomplished, I did not think you were going to be so smiley and bubbly and funny. I thought you were going to be kind of cold or like methodical. I was like, this woman, so effective, so successful. How did you accomplish that? Honestly, it's very rare to find someone who's a working mom of children who are both under the age of 10, who has all this stuff, who's like, yeah, I meditate at 9, and you're not playing it cool. Like, I don't think you're downplaying the hard work you're doing. Just tell me, how did you get here?
I think there are a lot of ideas about what an entrepreneur looks like. And this is something that specifically hurts women, is that the definition of an entrepreneur or a CEO or someone who is successful in business was always a male definition, right? And I remember when I was starting out, I would go to these like entrepreneur online business conferences that most everyone there was a man, all the speakers were men. And they would always joke about like, oh, entrepreneurs all have ADD. You know how it is to be an entrepreneur. You have this crazy ADD and you can't focus on anything and you have 100 ideas a minute. And I was like, I don't have ADD. You know, I was like, I'm very focused. And like we were talking about being deliberate and making plans. That's just obviously a lot of entrepreneurs do have ADD. I'm just not one of them. But I think we get these ideas about, yeah, what it looks like to be an entrepreneur, what it looks like to be a startup founder. And sometimes the ideas are even opposites. Sometimes it's like, oh, they're crazy and a mile a minute and have ADD. And sometimes it's like they're very cold and very methodical. But the truth is that there are all different sorts of humans that are successful at business, right? Your personality, whether you're friendly or unfriendly or cold or warm or focused or unfocused, like you can succeed at business with all different personality types.
You're just naturally perfect.
Agree.
What was I going to say?
I am very chill, and that's just a trait that I naturally have. It is hard to get me very upset. And I think it's a little uncool sometimes to admit to be chill, because like you were saying, people feel like they have to put this front out about hard work in particular. And yeah, it's one of the sort of worst lies, I think, that our society tells us, that hard work equals financial success. Because yeah, like you pointed out, the people that are doing the hardest work are certainly not making the most money. But I think part of it can be guilt. People who make a lot of money feel like they have to justify why they make so much money. And they're like, okay, yeah, I make $5 million a year, but it's because I get up at 4 a.m. and cold plunge and exercise every day. And I'm the last one out of the office. It's like, yeah, no, you don't make that much money because you work the hardest. There's lots of reasons why you make that much money, but it's not hard work. Some people might not want to admit that they work part-time, or might not want to admit that their life is more chill because they might have drama, or they might feel that other people have drama of like, oh, well, then that's not fair, this entrepreneurial success that you have.
Very interesting. So I love social psychology and relationship psychology. We actually don't like women who say they work really hard. And we don't like men who downplay the work they do. It's very interesting. As a woman, I feel like sometimes you have to downplay the work you are doing.
Because I've always worked for myself, I've just been able to avoid a lot of the BS, because I haven't had to navigate, like, one, I've never had to navigate any kind of corporate environment. And also the nature of my businesses, my software businesses have all been self-serve. So like, we don't have big clients, we don't have sales teams, we do the marketing, and then people just buy the product themselves. So I haven't had to do a lot of the song and dance that some women have had to do of whining and dining, impressing clients, closing the deal. That stuff just hasn't been a part of my work. So I think there are some things that I've been lucky to avoid and haven't been on my radar, like figuring out this balance of how to make myself seem likable. I just haven't worried about it.
Well, if I can say so, you are, I would say, a naturally likable person. It's a thing. Some people are just more likable than others. You cannot fake it or buy your way into it. Like Michael Bloomberg tried to buy his way into likability. Some people have it, some people don't, and it's fine. You can be successful and not be likable. In fact, there are many, many, many people who are successful and not likable. How much do you feel like your likability played into you being able to be so successful at business and also with being a mom?
Well, it's a funny question about being a mom, right? Like, think about likability. Like, I don't know, maybe your kids don't like you if you don't have likability.
I mean, like, okay, so you got to go to the grocery store or something and someone has to watch your kids. If you're likable, people are going to do that for you. If you're not likable, people won't do that for you.
That's a very good point. And you know what? I'm friends with a lot of my neighbors and they watch my kids sometimes. So yeah, I guess it's coming to play.
I guess that cheerleading can't pay dividends.
Finally paid off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never thought about likability in business before. I mean, of course, likability helps, I think, in all facets of life. And I think I'm generally pretty good at getting along with other humans. I've never shouted at anyone that I work with. I've never lost my temper at anyone that I work with. I also just, I don't get emotional about work. I never cry about work. I just like, it's, I don't know. It's just not a thing that I get super worked up about.
You are unlike any entrepreneur I have ever talked to, Laura. If I were to meet you, I'm going to be totally real with you. If I were just to meet you in person, like if I were just to talk to you like at a coffee shop or whatever, and you were with your kids, I would think you had a very chill, very low maintenance job in marketing or in design or something that was just low stress, easy. You are totally different than any entrepreneur I've ever met. They are highly neurotic. They're obsessed with working. They do weird stuff. They're like, I don't drink soy milk. Or like, I go outside in nice sun at 7 a.m. to really soak. Like, these people, they just have these weird, like, if you went to a restaurant, you would just be like, sure, I'll have whatever on the menu. I don't care. Kool-Aid in a juice box. I'm a mom.
But I genuinely think it is important to see different types of entrepreneurs, right? And that's why I do being visible as a female entrepreneur, as a female software founder, because there are just not that many of us. And, you know, the traits that you were just mentioning don't really have to do with being male or female. But I want all the different types of people to see that we often have this grass is greener thing, this model of whatever entrepreneurs have, it's not us. You know, like if we're shy, entrepreneurs are outgoing, or if we're ADD, entrepreneurs are focused, right? And I just want more examples out there of just, yeah, different types of entrepreneurs and different types of personalities. And that's why I'm also happy to talk about being a mom, being a parent, and being an entrepreneur. Because unfortunately, just the word mom has so many negative connotations, right? Like in the tech world, we talk about like, oh, your mom could figure it out. You know, it's so, it's like, even my mom can use that website, right? It's like a phrase that people use. And I just want more women sticking our neck out being like, yeah, of course I'm a mom and an entrepreneur. Like most people in the world choose to have children. It's just like a normal thing that most people do. So it's frustrating and baffling that it still is even like a thing that we have to talk about. Like, wow, how do you be a mom and an entrepreneur? And that's me denying reality. Like, of course, we do still need to talk about it. And there are just tons of problems about it. And there's tons of things to be figured out. But yes, I am looking towards this vision of the future where it would just seem strange to be like impressed in any way by someone being a mom entrepreneur. That it's just like, yeah, of course, those are two things that people do. So of course, people do them both together at the same time.
Very interesting. This is going to sound like a smash cut to my listeners, but I wanted to touch on something you talked about earlier in terms of someone selling their business, reaching their 40s and feeling unsatisfied. I have met a good number of people now, both men and women, who are like, I want to wait until I'm 40 to start a family so I can build my business. I will say significantly more men say that than women. I feel like when you get to 40, once you've built your business, I just feel like it's a little bit harder to start a family. What do you think about that?
So obviously, the biological realities are very different for men and women in their 40s. For most men, no problem making a baby in their 40s. For most women, you know, most women are not going to be able to get pregnant easily in their 40s.
Yeah, that was all over Twitter. It's been all over Twitter this week as a woman who's turning 31. And I'm like, stop it. I know it. I know it. I wanted to talk about something a little bit different related to this. If you are a guy and you start having kids in your 40s, your kids are going to have a fundamentally different experience than they would if you started having them, even if you were, you know, 35. What do you think about that? Like, do you think it is fair to build your business and then start having kids? Like, as, you know, a young mom, just tell me, what's your opinion on that? Because I meet a lot of guys who are like, yeah, I want to start having kids now. They're saying it to me, they're 40. I'm like, stay away from me. Do you feel like it's responsible for a man to build his business and sell it when he gets 40 and then start having kids? Because the child he has is going to have a fundamentally different experience having an older dad.
A lot of men don't seem to be emotionally ready to have kids till they're 40, unfortunately. I think they should, in a perfect world, they should work on themselves a little earlier and not wait. But yeah, I think that's fine. I think it's a hard thing for women because we can be kind of, or I know I've felt like resentful that we do have a different reality than men have. Like it is fundamentally unfair that our fertility changes dramatically at age 40 and theirs doesn't. But I don't know. It's become kind of strange now because obviously we do have so many more options as women with freezing our eggs and doing IVF and all these things, which are amazing. And it's great to have all those options. But I have seen with my friends that I feel like sometimes people are a little misinformed and a little too optimistic where it's like, oh yeah, I'll just freeze my eggs and then I just won't have to worry about that whole thing. But it's an incredibly difficult, expensive proposition to get pregnant at some point using frozen eggs or frozen embryos, as opposed to obviously not having to have any fertility treatments. So I think it's hard for women because sometimes we can get too reliant on being like, I'll just rely on the technology, but it's still horrible with the hormone shots and stuff. I mean, I didn't need to do that, thankfully, but just knowing all my friends that have been through it, no one wants to have the hormone shots, obviously. And I think it makes it a bit easy for us to cut it off and be like, I don't know, I'll just do it when I'm 40 because I have all this fertility technology.
Well, I should say here, I am very aware of the biological realities women face. The thing I don't think a lot of men consider. So I have a friend whose dad was 50 and his mom, I think she was like 35 when he was born. He had to go to therapy when he was seven to 12. He had to go to intensive therapy because he was so afraid of his dad dying. I think there is an element of selfishness that comes from both sides from waiting to start a family until much later on in life that I don't think people consider. Like, sure, if you're a guy, you can have kids when you're 45 or 50, but that child is going to have a way different experience in life than if you started having them when you were 30 or even 35. Like, you're at your 40, you're ready to start a family, you start having kids when you're 43. You're not going to meet your grandkids. You know, it's just you've made a different life for yourself. What do you think about that? And also for anyone who is, you know, thinking about starting a family, who's listening to this, what advice would you give them if they are over 40, they've built their business and they want to start a family?
I mean, I think anyone who wants to start a family should, you know, it's such a strong desire that so many of us have. If it's your desire, I think you should absolutely go for it, no matter your age and no matter, you know, what starting a family looks like for you. And I don't want to throw anyone under the bus for different ages, I guess. And I know that it happens for us at different ages. I mean, I wish that I had met the person I wanted to have kids with when I was 20. I would have had kids when I was 20, honestly. And that would have been great because then I'd be at 40 when they're 20. You know what I mean? I have one friend who got pregnant when she was 18 on accident, but then it ended up being a good guy that she got pregnant with and they stayed together and they went on to have more kids. And I'm like, dang, now you're ahead of the game. And interestingly, biologically, I think that way makes much more sense for women because it's like no one's having a career when they're 18, you know? So it actually makes a lot of sense to have kids when you're 18. And then once your kids are a bit older, you can do all the career stuff. The problem is finding someone to have kids with when you're 18, really difficult proposition that, you know, extremely few of us find that person. But I do wonder sometimes, like now there's been the whole thing with all the celebrities having kids really young, like the Kardashians, right, have had kids, the little Kardashians, Kylie had kids, right, I think when she was in her early 20s. And when I saw that happening, I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's going to be, if we'll ever go through a period where there's this cultural shift. Of course, right now, people are getting older and older. Like, I always wonder in the next 100 years if there's going to be some shift where everyone decides to have kids when they're 20. I don't know.
Everything I know about the Kardashians is against my will. But I will say I read something about how Kris Jenner pressures them to have children because they make money. She's pressuring them to have lots of babies because they can sell lines. That family, I think they're a little evil. Like, we don't have to talk about surrogacy or how you feel about that. But, you know, I can say I'm really glad I did not have a child when I was 18. I was definitely a late bloomer. Sounds like you, in terms of this, you're in favor of people having kids before they start their careers. That's really interesting. I haven't really heard that from entrepreneurs I've talked to or interviewed. So you're more of a like a have kids before you start your career. Like if you had to pick one to start with.
Yes, in some sort of fantasy world where you could just have the right partner and plot a point on the timeline. Also, energy thing. I mean, you were talking about having kids older. You have a lot more energy when you're younger. And it's just easier to deal with like the newborn, toddler, the whole thing. And yeah, it's become such a thing now to wait, right? To wait till like you're more financially secure, to wait until you're a better place in your career. And of course, there are financial realities with having kids. Like, it does cost a lot of money to have kids because childcare in America is so expensive. Like you said, because we often find ourselves in the problem of paying the same amount in childcare that we're making at a job. But people waiting later is why it happens so much that, yeah, women are in these higher ranks in their careers, but then they just have to put on the brakes entirely and like stop working for 3 years because they don't have those options to work a bit or to work even just less than 80 hours a week doing what they're doing. So in that sense, it makes a lot of sense when you're earlier in your career and it doesn't really matter so much if you have that gap. It's like, oh, I'm just at an entry-level job anyway. I'll have a gap or keep doing my lower commitment, lower intensity entry-level job.
Oh my gosh. I have a bunch of questions. I'll start with, how did you choose your life partner and how would you recommend people who are entrepreneurs or startup founders? What should they look for? What qualities have made your husband someone who's been great to raise kids with?
Women startup founders need to find a partner who wants to be an equal partner, which if you are a woman who dates men, there are a lot of men who are not looking to be an equal partner, unfortunately. I think if you are a female startup founder, you need to find a partner who is 100% in for doing at least half of the child rearing, at least half of the household tasks. And those men are out there. They are. My husband always knew that he wanted kids. That was always a really strong, clear priority for him. And I think that can be a bit of an idea that people have, like, oh, men don't want to have kids or they don't know if they want to have kids. Like, there are certainly men out there that are very clear that they want to have kids and that's important to them. So that was something, I mean, it sounds like kind of a low bar, like have kids with someone who wants to have kids, but it's like, we all have friends who have partners who did not want to have kids, you know what I mean? Or it seemed like they didn't want to have kids because they're kind of checked out from the whole kid situation. So yeah, if you're a woman, it's going to be really hard for you if you're trying to run a startup and you're doing 100% of the baby rearing, you're the clear primary parent, you're doing all the housework at home. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have read the studies about how women still do more at home, even if they're the primary breadwinner, even if they're the only one working, they're still doing more chores at home. So, you know, I fell in love with my husband. I wasn't just like looking for someone willing to sweep the floor, right? When you're choosing someone to marry or to have kids with, to be your life partner, make sure they're willing to like put in the work and then that's what they actively want.
So I've read about weaponized incompetence where it's like, you date a guy, he seems like he'd be a good partner. And when you get into a relationship with him and it's serious and you have kids, he stops doing things because he says he's not good at them or he would not be as good at them. Can you tell me about that? Are there any giveaways or clues that someone is not going to be a good partner? Obviously, you wouldn't know from your husband because it sounds like your husband is great, but I'm sure you have friends who maybe have partners that privately you're like, person's not a good person to date. Laura's not in her head. I was kind of worried she'd give me that sexist page comment like she did earlier and I'd have to like bounce back from it. But no, she's got stories. Laura, tell me your stories.
I think weaponized incompetence is very real. I love that phrase. So my husband and I actually call it Hummus Dad because there's this amazing British sitcom called Motherland, all about parenting. And there was this amazing joke on Motherland. So kids in the UK eat a lot of hummus. I'm not sure if they eat as much hummus here, but in the UK, hummus is like a top go-to kids food. So if you're making lunch, hanging around kids a lot, you're eating a lot of hummus. And there's this joke on Motherland where the dad comes up to like a buffet and he's like, oh, hummus, haven't had this in years. And it's just showing, right? Like he has no idea what's happening with his kids. So Chris and I will be like, look at someone and be like, Hummus Dad. Like one of those dads that you can tell has never spent time with their kids before and is totally baffled by the whole situation. But we'll also call each other out on Hummus Dad moments, you know, that we're each having, like we're doing something that makes us a Hummus Dad. Okay, but here's my spicy take on this topic, is that women absolutely contribute to this dynamic by the, I'll just do it myself. Men can do the purposeful weaponized incompetence thing, but women can do the, well, if you're not going to do it my way, I'm just going to do it myself. And I do see that dynamic a lot as well, that women edge out the men because they have some very specific way that they do things. And they're so upset that their partner isn't doing it that way that they're like, I just won't let you do it anymore. Like a difference between my husband and I love to plan ahead, as we have discussed several times. He just does not. He is not a planner, a header. He is a do it in the moment. And honestly, it always works out fine. So like when he takes the kids out when they were little, he did not take snacks. He did not take extra stuff. He's like, if we want a snack, I'll buy a snack. The world is full of snacks. I don't need to bring them in my bag. I'll just go buy it. And I'm like, you got to bring snacks. I like to bring the snacks. But honestly, the kids did not starve. He did buy a snack and they needed a snack, right? But I think sometimes this is, yeah, a dynamic that can happen where as a control thing or whatever, and it usually is like, you know, a male-female thing to make a generalization. It usually is like the woman being like, you have to pack snacks when you take the baby out. And he doesn't pack the snacks. And the woman's like, fine, I'll just pack the bag with the snacks. And now you're in a dynamic where you're like, oh, my husband can't pack the bag. I always have to pack the bag for him when he goes out. And I don't want to make less of anyone whose husband generally is failing at life and you have to do stuff for them like that. That can't happen. But I think that women can have a role in this where it's like step back and let your partner do things the way that they do it.
Very interesting. You know, I was at Whole Foods a few years ago and I remember seeing this really cute little girl and a mom who looked like a very busy working mom. I think she was probably in her late 30s. She was very attractive. She had a husband. Husband was taller. He's good looking. I think he was Middle Eastern. I'm just trying to paint a picture. And I was like, your daughter is so adorable. And she looked at me dead in the eye. She's like, you want her? You can take her. And I looked at them because that was just such a weird thing to say. Yeah. Looking at them closer, she looked exhausted. He looked dumb as a box of hammers. Yeah. Like I was looking at him just the way she was standing. I was like, this woman has to do everything. It was just such a surreal experience. Standing with my grocery cart, staring at them, like walking off, I was like, wow, I don't ever want to be that woman. I would rather have no kids than be in a dynamic like that where it is so bad that you are telling a total stranger, take my child, I can't handle this anymore. Once you have a child with someone, you cannot take it back. You are linked with that person forever. When you were with your husband, was there ever a question of, is this the right person for me? Or did you just fall in love and you're like, we'll figure it out. Like, do you feel like there was an element of luck that happened here with you?
I think there's a huge element of luck always because like happens in everybody's life and you can't control the other person. You hear crazy stories of people who are like, well, my husband and I got along fine, but then he started cheating on me. He became an alcoholic. Like just stuff happens in life. So I think there's definitely a huge amount of luck in it and you can't predict the future, but you can. I'm thinking of a friend now. They got divorced when her daughter was quite young, when her daughter was like two. And it was a real surprise to her what a hummus dad her husband turned out to be. He was not participating in the child raising and the helping. And I ask her, I'm like, what about before you had kids? Did he pick up his dishes? Did he help out at home? And she's like, you know, there's just, it wasn't that big a deal before we had kids. But I, looking back, she always did everything. It's just like, without the kids, she had the capacity to do it and she didn't notice and she was used to doing everything. So I do think that's something you can actively look for that happens is before you have kids, you have the free time to be the person who usually organizes things or who usually tidies up or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you were single before and you always tidied up because no one else did it and you just keep doing it and it's whatever. But then once you have a kid, there's so much 24/7 kid stuff that you have to do that suddenly it becomes very apparent that somebody else needs to tidy up and not just you all the time. So I think that is something if you're looking for the signs, if someone is the right life partner for you, they need to be doing all that stuff before. They're certainly not gonna, they're not gonna magically start before once you have the kid. And people can change, absolutely, and people can see the error of their ways. Of course, ideally, you don't want to be training them to turn over this whole new leaf once you have a baby. You want them to be there already.
I think you're on the money about that. So I don't talk about my personal life on the podcast because I want to avoid parasocial relationships. But I will say I dated someone for a very short period of time, probably 7 weeks, like just such a short, like barely dated. He had that kind of personality where he would just like leave dishes everywhere. And like I had to cook all the time and I was, you know, I was always cleaning up after him and I was always finding things to do and I was always starting conversations. And by the end of the month and a half I was dating him, I was so tired. I don't know. My mom was kind of like, Paige, what are you doing? And so I just called him. I broke up with him. He was very angry at me. And Laura, I remember I had to take a month of bed rest. I was like, I'm exhausted. I just don't see how someone can be in a relationship with someone like that. Like, it's like if you're busy, if you're working, if you've got all this stuff to do.
I guess it's one thing if the person is making a lot of money and you've agreed to be the caretaker, but we don't really live in a world where that is possible for most people. So, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is hummus dads. I think it's pretty obvious when you meet a guy and you spend a little bit of time with him if he's going to be a hummus dad or not.
I think it is obvious, and I think sometimes it gets hopefully overlooked. You're like, oh, but I love him. Oh, but he's great. Oh, or maybe it's like he's successful and he makes a lot of money and I can deal with this. But yeah, it's only going to get worse. And that's why I said, yeah, if you are a female founder, this is what you need to look for. Because sure, there are women out there that are happy to be the primary parent, that are happy to be the main person taking care of everything at home. They're like, yep, my husband works and I do the home stuff. Like, whatever. Obviously, if you're happy with that, no problem. But that's, if you're trying to run a business, like that's not you. Like no human can do, I don't think any human can do all those things or would love being in charge of all those things. It's too many things.
Word. All I can say is I agree with you. I agree with you. So that brings me to some maintenance questions. Just like, I don't want to belabor the hummus dad thing. Honestly, Laura, I find those types of people so exhausting because I cannot stomach laziness. I don't know if you could tell by my house and the way I have it set up. Laziness is like the worst quality for me in dating someone. I could not do it. It's like if someone wants to just sit on the couch for 3 hours and watch television, it's like, okay, well, you might as well just dig yourself an early grave because you're wasting your life. That's how I feel about it.
I do not share your sentiment on that. But I mean, honestly, the point is know thyself, right? And know what you're looking for. And I do think like I'm not a believer in a checklist for a partner. So when I first laid eyes on my husband, he was smoking. And that's like, I don't smoke, to be clear, never have. That's on everyone's deal breaker list. Like every single person out there is like, I would never date anyone who smokes, right? But then if you actually think about what makes a high quality partner, is actually that the most important thing? You know what I mean? And he was not a regular smoker and he doesn't smoke now, just to say that. But if he did, like, I would hate it. But also, like, who cares at the end of the day, right? Like, if he's being an amazing dad and a supportive partner, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of the things that are often on our checklists, like, they love sports or they hate sports or, like, they like the same music that I like or they have an important job. I think often those are not the things that really give us a great partner in our day-to-day life. So on the one hand, like, you need to know yourself. You need to know what's important to you. You need to know what you're looking for. But on the other hand, and I also think it's really important not to overlook people because they might not have those traits that you imagined that your partner would have, but aren't going to be the things that are really going to like make you happy at the end of the day.
It's a very romantic and beautiful way of looking at things, Laura. How do you deal with working mom guilt, if that's a thing for you?
I honestly don't have working mom guilt, and I feel like a jerk saying that out loud because I feel like I'm supposed to. And I guess it goes back to what I was saying earlier. I kind of want to say things out loud so other people can be like, I don't feel guilty about it either, but I felt guilty for not feeling guilty, you know? I just feel like I'm happy with who I am as a mom. I don't feel guilty about working because I want my children to work, you know? Like, I feel like that's a good role model for them to have. But as I mentioned, I mean, I've been lucky/deliberate in being able to choose the hours that I work and being able to choose the time that I work. So yeah, I don't feel guilty about my work because the time I spend on work is exactly what I want it to be.
I love that. I'm glad I asked that. I feel like that's a good answer. Controversial question. As a working mom and someone who's involved in technology, how do you feel about screens and screen time and phone screens being the babysitter for kids?
So I think screens are hugely different than when we were kids. And one of the biggest differences is being able to watch whatever you want instantly. So when we were kids, even kids who watch TV all day, you had to watch what was on the TV, right? Like you didn't get to choose to click on your favorite show. You just watched what was on. If you had cable, you had Nickelodeon. So at least you could choose like a kid's channel. Or if you didn't have cable, like you had to wait for, you know, when they showed the live kids shows. So that's a hugely different experience than being able to like click, click, click. My 5-year-old, when she watches a show, she like fast forwards through it. I know.
Paige is like widening her eyes at me.
It's crazy to watch her interact with it because, yeah, she skips the parts that she's not interested in. When she watches a movie, she skips around the whole thing, which is, yeah, a much more dopamine hit, right, type of experience. Like, she's looking for her favorite parts. She's skipping past the parts that she doesn't like or boring or whatever. So I allow my kids screens, obviously, from what I just said, but I am a huge believer in restricting screen time a lot. I mean, severely, I guess, by today's standards, when so many kids just have unlimited screens. So we don't do any screens like out and about at restaurants or in the car or anything like that. We do have screen time most every day. It's dependent on their ages, but like usually like an hour a day, which I think is a pretty good amount. But what's kind of crazy is like an hour a day is not much. So many kids do screens when they first wake up in the morning. I don't know if people know this who don't have kids. Like so many kids, when they first wake up in the morning, like their whole morning routine, they're watching videos, there's TV on as soon as they get home from school. Obviously, you see kids out and about at restaurants have screens the whole time. And the screens are so addictive. So whether that's like watching a show, but again, not like when we were kids and it was just a show that was on. Like when our kids are watching shows, they're choosing whatever they want to watch, right? Or if they're playing games. I don't think a kid has the capability to choose to do other things if screens are an option. This is not some sort of controversial point of view. Almost every adult I know is way more addicted to their phone than they would like to be, right? Like almost everyone is like, I wish I didn't use my phone so much. I'm totally addicted to it. So expecting a child to be able to manage that kind of addiction is insane to me. And where we live, kids play outside a lot. And I see 100% correlation. The kids who have unlimited screen time in their families, like, don't go outside. They don't. They're inside playing video games because playing video games is like more immediately fun than playing outside. It just is. That's just the reality. I don't know. Maybe there's like 1% of kids who are like, I'd just rather play with sticks in the dirt than I would video games. But like, yeah, video games hit all those parts of our brain that are very exciting. So, I mean, I do think screens are a huge problem with kids now. My youngest one is just learning to read, but my 9-year-old loves to read. So he's a big reader all the time. So he does take, you know, if we're going out to a restaurant or something, he will take a book, or if he's just waiting somewhere, he'll take a book. And we get so many comments. Like people come up to us all the time and are like, oh, it's so nice to see a kid reading. And I'm like, Jesus. It shows you that it's quite rare to see a kid just sitting with a book, because a lot of kids are sitting with a screen and don't use books to entertain themselves anymore. I think it's kind of obvious that it affects your brain in a completely different way, sitting there reading a book while you're waiting for something versus playing a video game. And I can tell you for sure, like, kids get real cranky when you take their video games away. Like when your kid has sat there immersed in a video game and you try to take it away, they're mad. In a way, they're not mad when they've been reading a book.
Well, yeah, I have many opinions on screen times and kids, but I'm not a parent and I don't want to get in trouble on the internet, so I'm not going to share them. The one thing I will say is, so children up until about age 12 model their behavior after their parents. So it sounds like you've just set a good example for your kids. If your child is preferring reading when they're at the dinner table, that has to do with you and the example you've been setting.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because I read on Kindle. I mean, my husband and I are both big readers, but I read on Kindle. And sometimes, like, when the kids were younger, I kind of felt the need to tell them, like, it's a book I'm reading. Because it's like, you know, it kind of looks the same as a tablet, especially, like, to a 2-year-old. They're maybe not going to know the difference between an iPad and a Kindle. So you want to be like, no, look, really, I'm reading. And this is such a random thing, but it's something I think about with parenting. I think another thing that's really hard about parenting now is we do so many of our like life logistical jobs on screens. I bet when you were a kid, like, do you remember ever going to the bank with your mom?
Funny. Oh my God. Actually, I'm looking for it. It's a really cute picture. It's like when I was really little. So it's before my dad left. I think he was the one that took it. I think it was just me and my mom. I don't know if my second brother was born yet, but I'm sitting in the bed. And I have this big 80s phone and I'm holding it to my ear. And I think I was just pretending to talk into it because that's what I saw my mom do all day. Like, she's just always on the phone, just doing work and stuff. And like as a baby, I was like, I want to do this. Sometimes, Laura, sometimes I feel like when I'm working, sometimes I still feel like I'm that girl. I'm like, am I really an adult? I just feel like a child holding a big phone. Like this interview, I feel I'm a child holding a phone.
So I bring up the bank because, like, yeah, I feel like I was always at the bank. I'm not sure what everyone was doing at the bank back in the day, but there was, like, a lot of bank time. Even just being on the phone because you could overhear what your mom was doing, right? And now when we do all that stuff on the computer, as far as our kids are concerned, it's like we're looking at Reddit, right? Like it's all the same to them. And like they don't get to interact with that part of our lives, which is just really sad. Like it was really boring when we were kids, right? But like you would go to the grocery store, you'd go to the bank, whatever. You would kind of do those life logistical jobs, or you would hear your parents on the phone paying the bills or whatever. Now that all happens on a screen that our kids don't see, and like they don't get any part of those skills. They don't get to interact with that part of our life. I don't know. I'm not really making any point with this. So it's just something a bit like sad that the internet has taken away from our lives.
Speaking about internet, this is just a side question because you seem like a great mom and like, give a lot of good insights into how to parent. How do you protect your children's innocence when it comes to internet access? I remember when I was a kid, I got internet access when I was like 8, I want to say. And I remember like reading stuff that I don't think I was supposed to have access to. It wasn't my mom's fault. She's a great parent. It's really easy to go online and you can Google anything and you can just click your history. Wait, how do you handle it? Like, what do you do?
My kids don't have internet access. Yeah, is the answer to that question. I don't know if you've heard that most kids want to be YouTubers. That's absolutely true. So my 9-year-old, most of the kids in his class, when you ask him what they want to be when they grow up, they say YouTubers.
Okay, yeah. So read the question.
So you asked, what's his dream job and what does he want to be when he grows up? My answer to that is full-time writer and part-time actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't let my son watch YouTube, which he's very upset about. Because if I let him watch, you know, Netflix signed in as a kid or like Disney Plus signed in as a kid, there is a very strong filter on that content, right? Not necessarily that I'm going to agree with all of it or whatever, but there is a corporation that has vetted that all the content on those platforms is appropriate for kids. And that's obviously not the case on YouTube. And yeah, even if you're signed in as a kid's profile or whatever on YouTube, of course, things get through because I've uploaded videos to YouTube, so I know how it works. They just have you check a box. Is this for kids? Like, check yes or no. And I know they don't manually review all the content. So I don't let my son watch YouTube during his screen time. He also just doesn't have internet access. So during his screen time, sometimes he plays games on Switch or like video games on the computer, or sometimes he watches shows, usually with his sister. If they're watching, they'll watch together and they just have, yeah, Disney Plus or Netflix. But he doesn't have any way to browse the internet. He doesn't have an iPad. Like an iPad lives in our house for the family. But my kids don't think that they own any electronics.
Yeah, I think you're the perfect mom.
Should we name the podcast that? Laura Roeder, the perfect mom.
No, I don't want you to get cyberbullied. That's how you get mean people on your page. Oh my God. Don't cyberbully Laura. She's a good mom. She's a great mom. So Laura, I know we are coming up on time. I do have one final question for you, which is that, so you've accomplished so much in your life. You are probably one of the most qualified people I've met to talk to about any number of things, like marketing, business, blogging, lifestyle design, becoming an entrepreneur at a very young age, and having enormous success. And yet, what I wanted to talk to you about the most was your role as a mom. How do you feel about that?
I absolutely love this question, right? Because the subtext is like, is this annoying that this is what I wanted to talk to you about? And it's not annoying. And I think it's an interesting subtext, right? Because the implication is that talking about being a mom diminishes the other things, right? That's the implication in the question. Like, oh, even though you've done all these things, do you not want to be just a mom? And it's like, yeah, a mom is one of the many things that I am. But it shows that we look down on it as a less important role, which is kind of crazy because if I think of all the things that could save the planet, like if somehow everyone could be a high quality parent, planet saved. You know what I mean? Like humanity saved. Like if everyone could have loving, supportive parents and have a great childhood, just all the problems, all the terrorists, all, you know, just like gone. They're all gone. No one's starting wars and had an excellent childhood, right? Like, that's not a thing. So yeah, I think we need more public conversation where being a mom in particular, yeah, not a dad, but a mom, is not something lame, is not something embarrassing, is not something where you're like just a mom. But it's like, yeah, it's one of the things I do. It's one of the things that's very important to me. It being very important to me does not make other things unimportant to me. And it doesn't diminish my other successes in any way.
I love that. I love that answer. And I mean, I think you're a great mom. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast, Laura. It was very interesting. And I honestly heard a lot of things that I was not expecting to hear, especially about just how relaxed and how easygoing you are. I have never met an entrepreneur who is as successful as you are, who also has just a beach vibe.
No one has ever said I have a beach vibe before. Cue the cute song.
Back in New England, I'm driving north on 95. The leaves have turned and so have I. The birds have been singing a warm welcome home. Fire's been burning and food's on the stove, on the stove. Days feel longer when you're not around. I've been trying to get get to the front door of the house built by my mother. She's already waiting, dressed in beautiful colors. And when we're together, we'll talk and we'll listen. Our new stories and memories missing, she said. Days feel longer when you're not around. And I've been trying to get both on the ground. Well, me too. Southbound 95. Trees are all dead and gone, and so am I. Birds have been singing a bitter goodbye.